When I asked Pete Wentz to talk about rock and masculinity, this is what he said.
I feel like I say everything about myself I could ever say in the lyrics.
The lyrics to which song in particular?
I guess I would probably go to Thanks for the Memories.
That's a song from Fall Out Boy's most recent album. Pete Wentz explained what it was about that song.
You know, Thanks for the Memories, you know, he tastes like you, only sweeter. And everyone's like, well, why is it he tastes like you, only sweeter? And it's because it's a quote from the movie Closer.
When did you do it here? Answer the question!
Oh, it's a great movie. It's such a good movie. I walked out of it the first time I saw it. It, like, bothered me so much. I was like, wow, that kind of was a vision of my life. But there's a point where I think his name is Clive Davis.
Clive Owen.
He's talking to Julia Roberts, and she's like, she's been cheating on him, and he catches her cheating on him. And he's like, I want to know. He's like, what was it like? Well, where did you do it?
How many times?
Twice.
How?
She's like, well, we did it here, and we did it there. And he's like, she's like, why do you have to know? And he's like, because I'm a caveman, I have to know. And then he's like, what was it like? And he's like, oh, it was really good. And he's like, what did he taste like? And she's like, he tastes like you,
but sweeter.
That's the spirit. Thank you for your honesty.
And it was kind of more of the commentary on, I don't know, just the way we are as men, and we essentially are cavemen. I think that is so funny that I get labeled so effeminate when I'm not like gonna build a car or something like that, but I sometimes feel like I make decisions simply based on testosterone. Like, I could become, if I was dating someone in this room, I think I have the ability to become jealous of this couch that the person was sitting on, you know?
So what's the last decision you made based on testosterone?
The last bad decision I made based on testosterone simply was, I was on a 10-foot stack of amps, and I was like, I could just walk off this thing, you know, kind of like just gracefully walk off of it, or I could jump off of it right now. And there's definitely a thing inside you as a man that I probably can't really explain as well to someone who's a female, where if you have the option to throw a rock really far, you'll do it. You know, if you have the option to show in front of a bunch of girls that you can jump across a pond, you'll do it, you know. And it doesn't, it just overtakes any rational thought that you would have. And I decided to jump off of it, and I broke my two bones in my foot.
Pete Wentz went on to tell me how Fall Out Boy evolved into the multi-platinum force it is today.
I mean, one of the things is trial by fire. You learn certain things to do and not to do. You know, you do this thing and you're like, oh, that was a really bad idea, you know, or whatever. And thankfully, like, the fan is probably the most forgiving person on the planet, you know. And when I say the fan, I mean, like, the fan in general. I mean, like, if you look at Britney Spears and what she sold in her first week, like, the fan is the most forgiving person on the planet. They want you to win, you know. At the same time, I think that if you listen, it's weird because it's like, it's revisionist history for people to go and say, we started Fall Out Boy as a plan to kind of get famous and make a lot of money. Because, first of all, on the career front, if you want to make a lot of money throwing darts at a board, I would hope that hitting a band and being a musician would be the last one that you would ever throw it at. Because it's probably one of the, A, hardest processes, and you can make money far easier doing something else. And I think that 98% of musicians don't really live the life that people expect that they live. But as Fall Out Boy went, it kind of snowballed, and it would be like, oh, you could try this, you could try that, you know. And at some point, especially as you stop selling records, your brand is what becomes important, you know. And the brand name Fall Out Boy is the most important thing. The culture of Fall Out Boy is the most important thing. And so we have to be very, like, careful of who we align ourselves with and what decisions we make.
Well, you're also in the first generation of successful musicians post Napster. Really.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that we're also, like, the first generation of musicians that grew up with Behind the Music. So it's like, we saw that you don't invest money in cars, you know.
Pete Wentz went on to talk about the work of expanding the Fall Out Boy brand and being influenced by Andy Warhol.
Why not have your own clothing company? Because my mind does not think only in 4/4 time with, like, certain melodies. You know, like, I have ideas outside of that, you know. And why do I need to be attached to a record label when I could have my own record label, you know? And I think that that way, A, you can go to sleep with your ideals. And, you know, like, if somebody says something to me about my clothing company or a record label, like, it's very easy for me to, A, tell the person, like, I know 90% of what goes on in, you know, that, and I could say, yes, we did that. No, we did not do that. Yes, you know, we did that for this reason. And then, B, all the mistakes fall on your own shoulders. Like, there's no one else to call. Like, if I want to scream at somebody on the phone, like, I call up and scream at myself, you know, or whatever, which does happen. But I think that at this point, to me, it's like there's nothing that exists like the factory anymore. Like, I don't really feel like there's anyone on a pop level that's experimenting with audio and art and visuals and doing it all with like, I mean, I think that there's now kind of in both pop culture and the rock world, there's a sense of kind of like rugged individualism. Like, you know, if that band's doing well, it means that we're not doing well. Like, if they won that award, it means that my band is somehow losing, you know. And I think that there's something to be said for like having a collaborative relationship with artists. And I don't mean in the way that it's like you have this dude do a guest spot on your record. I mean like having honest to God collaborations, you know, like me and Travis will go and write lyrics from Gym Class Heroes, you know. We opened a clothing store in Chicago, but really for me it was like it's right by where this venue we used to go and watch shows at all the time, the Metro, and I was always like, I want a place to hang out, so we put in a Miss Pac-Man game there and kids can just go there and hang out, and we saw Travis's art there. So to me it's kind of more about making that impression than making a whole lot of money, because I know that like when I'm 40 years old, if there was something where I wanted to make a whole lot of money, I'm sure that I could find a way to do it, you know, and that's not what's interesting.
Somehow the conversation turned to interesting ways to make money. Legal ways he hadn't tried yet.
I mean, I eat Sprinkles cupcakes all the time, you know, or whatever. And I was like, you know what? I want to open a cupcake shop. And then I was like, no, you don't really want to open a cupcake shop because you're really only interested in the frosting at Sprinkles. And I was like, I want to open a frosting bar. And my manager was like, what is a frosting bar? And I was like, I don't really know, you know? And it's like, I was like, I just want the frosting to be the reason that people go there, you know, or whatever. And he was like, okay, well, I think that we can come up with that, you know, or whatever. And so it's always just ideas like that. And some of them are, you know, are the successes are usually what people hear about. But then, of course, they're always like the ones that kind of are just like, oops, I don't know why we tried to do that. I'm trying to think of something that would not get me sued to say, I can't really think of, like, the failures, but we've definitely, like, come up with ideas where, oh, we were driving into Barney's, and I was with my assistant, and she's like, we were driving, and the valet stopped her and was harassing her, and she goes, don't you know who I think I am? And I was like, oh, that's genius. I was like, that's so crazy. And so we bought that domain, you know, don'tyouknowwhoithinkiam.com. And we've done absolutely nothing with it because we don't really, we were like, it's a genius idea and there's something there, but it's like, I don't really know what it is there.
It is the title of a Fall Out Boy song. Penny for your thoughts, but a dollar for your insides. I asked Pete Wentz what it was about Panic at the Disco that compelled him to sign the unknown band, fronted by Ryan Ross, to his label.
Ryan's sincerity and the band's sincerity, they were just so green. They were these guys in the desert in Vegas who had no idea about anything. His lyrics just, like, hit me, man. It was like, they're vastly different from Fall Out Boys in the way that most of them are telling stories, and I think that Ryan maintains that the lyrics are pretty fictional, but from knowing Ryan, I don't think that the lyrics are inherently fictional. I think that he changes names, you know, kind of, or whatever he does. He has kind of a Kerouacian kind of way where he changes names, but I think that the stories are pretty close to what they are, and it was just an explosion waiting to happen. It was like somebody had shaken up a Coke and given it to me, and I was like, why doesn't anybody see this? Coke is about to open and explode everywhere, and that was what I saw in that band. Well, in fact, we'll all look at it this way. I mean, technically, our marriage is saved. Well, this calls for a toast, so pour the champagne. I think that, I mean, now everybody can see it in them, you know. Now, I mean, like, the problem with, you know, since bands like Guns N' Roses, and especially a band like Nirvana. Like, everyone's looking for the next Nirvana, but the next Nirvana is not going to come in the form of flannel shirts and, you know, a three-piece with, you know, this, you know, genius songwriter who's so anti-pop. Pop is unbelievable. You know, the next Nirvana or band that will be seen like that is going to come in a totally different form. And so that's, I'm not in any way comparing, you know, Panic at the Disco and Nirvana, but I'm just saying that I think that lots of times the way the record industry works is they chase one idea and then oversaturate it and people become bored with it, and then they chase another idea, and then a new idea comes along and kind of knocks that idea out, and then they chase that idea and oversaturate it and sign a million bands that sound the same and look the same, and kind of some of them work, some of them don't. And it's in an unfortunate way. That's actually a lot of what Arms Race is about. It's kind of like the fast food idea of music. You can dress a boy up and make him sing certain things, but I don't know that it's really real.
Speaking of dressing boys up, I asked Pete Wentz about his venture into fashion. He said it started long before his band's success.
I would sit in my basement and I would like sew shirts and bleach them. I was really into like bleaching shirts or whatever and changing like the color saturation kind of or whatever. And my mom, it would drive her crazy. But then people would come up to me and they'd be like, where can I get that shirt? And I'd be like, I don't know, this is the only one I have, you know, or whatever. And then so, again, talking, you know, John, who does the cadence with me, like, I talked to him and he was like, well, why don't we make a couple shirts and, you know, see what that is? And I was like, well, I don't really just feel like making shirts. So I wrote this, like, kind of like children's story, and then I based the first couple shirts on that, you know. And then from there it's kind of jumped into whatever's on my head. It's weird because it's a lot different than music. We're just working on a seasonal basis now, you know, or whatever. And before we were just doing collections, and we didn't work on anything like where it went from like France to Italy to New York to LA. We weren't working like that at all. We kind of did it our own way. But we've always taken small steps. Like, we've had chances to do, like, you know, all-in buy-ins with like PacSun or Hot Topic, and we've never really wanted to pigeonhole ourselves like that. Like, the first collection co-brand we did was with DKNY Jeans, and that was because we wanted to do denim, and it seemed like why would we ever co-brand with DKNY Jeans? So that's why it seemed like it was a good idea at the time, you know. And now we have our own store in Chicago, and we're doing a collection with Nordstrom's in the spring. But to me, it's just another place where you can kind of express yourself, I guess. I don't know, like, we always have new ideas for, you know, we have a range coming out online eventually that's going to be like these kind of in-your-face kind of big block letters, like, I love America, war is awesome, and like, Hollywood's great, we all love plastic, and just these kind of like words that don't fit together with each other that will probably, again, push certain people's buttons, and certain people will just be like, that's just, you know, people trying to push people's buttons, you know. But that's kind of what's interesting to me. And now I'm interested in making, designing items that don't have such emboldened statements on them, maybe urban, considered quote-unquote like Urban Outfitters t-shirts. Like, I'm interested in doing like actual clothing and fabric design, you know, and that's kind of what we're getting into. And for the fall, we're gonna, I think, do like 12 pieces that'll be just pieces without like a gaudy print on them. They're gonna be different. I guess the closest designers that I would put them to would be like a Helmut Lang or Morphine Generation or something like that, kind of, you know. And that's just because that's what I'm interested in, I guess.
I asked Pete Wentz about the misconceptions of him.
Oh, there's a million. I mean, one of them is that when you get to this level of whatever you're doing, you become a WWF character, and people see you only in that light, like, and you're the bad boy or you're the good guy, and like everything you do is like, you know, seen as that way. You know, when From Under the Cork Tree came out, people were like, the story is, oh, the bassist actually does everything. He does all the business and image side and writes all the lyrics, and that's what's so interesting about it. And then when Infinity on High came out, the story was Pete was holed up and went to Hollywood and, like, was just out running around at parties, and, like, Patrick wrote and saved this entire record, you know. And the interesting thing to me was that we both were just as involved in both records in the same exact part of the process, you know. And I think that both records were misperceived in that kind of way. I don't know. It's hard to say what, like, the biggest misconception about myself is. I know that whenever people meet me, they always change their mind about me. In front of a microphone, I'm a very, very, very loud person. But not in front of a microphone, I'm a very, very, very quiet person. People mistake that, I think, often for arrogance. But I think that I have an interesting brand of narcissistic insecurity that would probably really be what it is. Like, when I get up and look at myself, I think I look weird, you know. And so when people say I look weird in blogs, it doesn't really bum me out because I'm like, yeah, I get it. Like, I'm not trying to look, you know, like, I mean, like, that's what blows my mind. It's like, I'm not trying to look good. Like, I try to look good for my, like, I have an idea of how I want to look, and I like how that is, you know. It's the same way that, like, probably Johnny Depp is in Edward Scissorhands. Like, it's like, well, he doesn't, well, that doesn't make sense, but, like, or, you know, like, to look into that same world, like Jack Skellington, like, he likes how he looks, but maybe the world doesn't necessarily like how he looks and those intentions, you know, or whatever. But I'm not trying to be sexy. Like, I'm not trying to be a cool guy or whatever, you know. And I'm trying to be sexy for myself, but I'm not trying to be, like, make it on this list or whatever. Because, like, I know there's a zillion things I could do to myself that would, like, I would work out and I would cut my hair and I would not diet and I would wear different clothes if I wanted to look a certain way that would, like, guarantee me to get on lists, you know, or whatever. So that's what's interesting about it. When I end up on the list, I just, like, we laugh about it, like, all night, you know, whatever. And I think that, I guess I think that the biggest misconception about me is that people think it's more calculated than it is. I mean, I think it's more calculated than some people think it is, but a lot of it is pretty spontaneous, and a lot of it's just like, oh, this is what we're doing now, and, you know, next year I might be in the gutter, and I don't really know, you know. It's like kind of one of those things, you know. I really didn't plan on breaking my leg, you know, and it's kind of a bummer that that's the story that runs out throughout national media rather than, like, whatever's going on in Burma or whatever, you know. But, I mean, I just think it blows my mind that people would think that, you know, people think that that's all, that it's all part of this big, like, giant plan, you know. And maybe someone's pulling the strings, but not me.
I just have to say, for the record, you don't appear to be wearing eyeliner.
It got boring to me, you know, whatever, and it stopped actually pushing any boundaries at all. And it was kind of like, I would go places and, like, everybody was wearing eyeliner, and it just kind of got a little bit boring. So right now the eyeliner's gone.